This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Feminism in your ears. It's another broad podcast on Joy 94.9. Keep listening. Hashtag feminism, hashtag podcast, hashtag broad on Joy 94.9.
Gonna marry the night, I won't give up on my life. I'm a warrior queen, live passionately tonight. Not waxing the legs, or shaving the pit.
And you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
You know, I think that the important piece around the high heels, I guess a little bit about the high heels, and you say you won't wear high heels. I think the piece is that we, for me anyway, is that we don't demonize the woman who is in high heels and we don't demonize the woman who's out of high heels. I think there is a culture that, particularly that I work in mainstream media, that wants to say that all women should be in heels and all that. I think that's ridiculous. I think it's really, how do we begin to celebrate all the ways in which we want to comport ourselves and not say that one person is more feminist than the other, and so that we can again find ways to come together across difference.
I think it's difficult because some people are more feminist than others. The fact is...
That's why we love bell hooks.
This is something that's been on my mind lately, and it's been disturbing me, is that if feminism is all things to all people, then what is it? I mean, how do we locate it as a radical political movement in our lives if everybody just makes of it, which doesn't mean that we should demonize, but we do have to be clear about what are the boundaries. What is the line that you cross that you can, in fact, say, I'm a feminist? Like, for me, my students will say, well, I'm anti-abortion, but I'm a feminist. And I'll say, but that is impossible, because you can be... You can say, I would never choose to have an abortion, because I don't support that for myself. But there is no one who's genuinely a feminist who doesn't support reproductive rights for women. And it's, again, I mean, it's so hard for us because we live in this binary world that's always saying choose one thing or the other. I don't try to get someone to choose my values about abortion, but I do feel that part of the essence of feminism is that women have control over women's bodies, that women have reproductive rights, all women. And so you can't want to take that away from somebody and then brag about how feminist you are.
Acknowledgement to the traditional owners of the land, Kulin Nation. Broad would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands that we broadcast from, the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to all the Kulin elders and women from the past, present, and those women who will be our future elders. We'd also like to acknowledge with respect the traditional owners of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands that we broadcast to, and pay respect to all elders and women elders from all clans and nations, past, present, and future. So welcome to Abroad, everyone. That was well, well, well. And now it's Broad time here on Joy 94.9, post-Radio Fond week. And here we are. Thank you for coming in again there, Lauren.
Don't worry, I'm here every week.
Yeah, that's great.
Wouldn't miss a show. And how are we doing this week, Sonia?
Yeah, it's been a very interesting week, to say the least. It's been a very intense but interesting week with a lot of highs, a lot of lows, and but one of the highlights is to have someone like Julie Kuhn from Wire is in here. Welcome.
Great to be here.
That's really good. Of course, Wire stands for, I need to get this right,
Women's Information Referral Exchange.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's called WIRE.
It's a lot easier, isn't it?
Yeah. So, look, it's great to have you on. We'll be talking to you a bit later, of course, about what WIRE is and what's coming up. There's some big fundraising and big
events. Good can't wait to tell you about it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, what have we got next?
Tonight on Broad, if you've just tuned in and you're up for the feminist agenda Broad style, we'll be talking to Lucy Lawless, or Lucy Flawless, as we in the Xena fan community call her, as well as the broadcast news. And we also have, we're going to talk about a little bit about Queens today.
Yeah, well, it is Queen's birthday.
It is.
So we can't be amiss without some kick-ass broad bitches of history, really.
Oh, totally. And we've got definitely some amazing
women there.
Yeah, some you may not have heard. There's more than one queen. There has been more than one queen in history. And we also have an interview with Shirlene Robinson. Tell us a little more about Shirlene.
Gay and lesbian then and now, it's Australian stories from a social revolution. She's a co-author with Robert Reynolds, and they looked at pretty much the last 60 years of LGBTIQ experiences in Australia, and looking at it from the perspective of individuals and their stories and their coming out stories, or their life experiences and how it's changed over time, leading up to where we are in Australia pretty much now. So the book is out now through Black Ink Books. So more about that. But I think it's time for some
Warrior Princess.
Yeah. This is Sonia here, and Lauren and Julie on Broad. Now, if you have any messages, please send them in 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. But there's also our Twitter, which is
at BroadFem949. Send us through a bit of a tweet or even Facebook us. We're happy to answer all your questions, and we are here for you as feminists.
Yeah. Thank you. You're listening to Broad. This is Sonia for Broad on Joy 94.9, speaking to the amazing Lucy Lawless. She has arrived in Melbourne.
Oh, Sonia.
Here for Oz Comic Con.
Yeah.
Now, for you, of course, everybody knows you. That's it. And Lucy, we can't go past talking about Xena, of course.
Yep.
It's 21 years now.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
It's shocking, but amazing.
Amazing. What's amazing to me is that people still love it and even remember it is quite a feat, I think, after 21 years, because it's been off the air a long time, you know, so I'm very grateful to it and to the fans.
Well, I think one time I saw you at a convention, there was, like, the first few rows, there were intergenerational fans now. So you've got grandma.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mum and now granddaughter, you know.
Yeah.
As fans. How does that feel, like, that sort of generational love coming at you?
I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it. I mean, you'd think you'd be horrified because it means that you're getting old yourself, but actually I could be a grandmother. My daughter is 27, but I'm not. She's not. So I guess it's to be expected. This is the price of not dying young, you see, Sonia. You get to have all the fans, and I welcome them all.
And we are a queer radio station, so of course have a big following.
Whoa!
Yes, you do.
I'm aware of that.
Good.
Great.
In New Zealand, there's same-sex equality now with same-sex marriage. We still don't have it in Australia.
I know. What's wrong with you people? You know what? The world doesn't fall apart when you get marriage equality. It just doesn't. It has not affected my marriage one iota. The fact that other people who love each other can formalise their relationships and that they have marriage equality does not hurt mine whatsoever. The world will not cave in.
And
it makes them happy.
Exactly.
Why do you want people being happy? Happy people are more productive, members of society, you know what I mean?
Well, you've got no arguments here, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's funny that I was trying to tell you that, right?
Yeah.
like I'm preaching to the converted. I'm sorry.
The characters that you play, you seem to play, you're starting to play sort of darker, I suppose, more villain-like characters, or more complex, maybe that's a better word for it.
Maybe it is just more villain-like. I mean, nothing's so complex as your average workaday person, you know. But you're right, and I think maybe that goes with the age group that I'm in, you know, that powerful women are often got more of those kind of devilish and demented qualities, but I will say they're much more fun to play. I'd never wanted to play the happy wife. What a bore. something that writers default to when they hire me as their, you know, first it's like, take your clothes off, put her in a bucket of blood, make her kiss a girl.
Right, yes.
So this is the 1, 2, 3, the ABC of you know, somewhere these things will happen. There's going to be a bucket of blood, there's going to be a girl kiss, and there's going to be, yeah, some sort of element of nakedness. What I hated at 25 is kind of fun at 48. I'm really quite proud of myself now.
And as a woman, because we are a feminist show as well, we look at that. Has that been a factor, as being a woman, those experiences?
I'm so blessed because I came from a very egalitarian society in a very egalitarian home with a lot of brothers. I could see what knuckleheads they were, and I knew I was not inferior to them in any way. So like, I never thought, never experienced any deficit, you know, so it didn't really register with me. I do recognize, however, that that's not everybody's experience. I was just one of the luckiest children in the world, you know. I don't deny the need for equality activism in all areas of society, but including women's equality. I've benefited from a lot of women's hard work, you know, as women through the 60s and 70s, while I was the kid who...
Who was an inspiration?
Oh, well, my mother, and believe it or not, Catholic nuns. I went to, you know, Catholic school, and it was all run by nuns, and they were good women. They were good women, they were, and they're real activists, and they've been such supporters of me and my activism. So I got nothing but good things to say about the women that were around me as a child. And a lot of them were Catholic nuns.
Very staunch and feisty, some of them, I should imagine.
And good, that lived lives of service, and we were expected to do the same, and I hope that's what I'm continuing to do.
I can imagine you in a nun's habit, to be honest. Fighting the good fight, you know, with superpowers.
Well, you know, I did wear one.
So what do you want to say to those who are listening, to, say, young women who are listening, or women who, how to empower them and to get them?
I don't know how to answer that question exactly, but here's something that's in my mind at the moment, because I have somebody in my life that I really see them struggling to do this, and it's a young woman, to put a boundary of decency around herself, beyond which certain things, if it transgresses that boundary, but it's about safety or about relationships, there's a little invisible force field around you. If it, and it's unwanted, or it does not deserve to be within your, you're in a space, it's gone. And I don't know how to teach that to somebody who hasn't been raised with a lot of love and care. Every woman and every boy also has to, sometimes you've got to retrofit it, you know. You've got to find how to keep yourself safe and free, because safety doesn't mean you have to be afraid or to be afraid of the world is a bad thing. Safety means that you can go confidently in the world. Joy Radio. Hi, I'm Lucy Lawless, and you're listening to Broad. Broads on Broad.
That's great. Thank you very much, Lucy.
Oh, a pleasure. You're welcome.
Bye
now.
Bye.
From Australia and around the globe, this is the Broadcast News. This is the Broadcast News with Lauren Stardust. And if you are just tuning in, we have some very sad news today, and I'm sure a lot of you in the queer community would be aware of this, that it's been a very heartbreaking day as news spread about the mass shooting in popular gay nightclub Pulse in Orlando, Florida. The lives of 50 clubgoers were taken by gunman Omar Mateen, with another 53 injured. This was while attending a popular Latin American night held by the venue. The gunman's ex-wife has come forward with information that Mateen was a domestic abuser who wanted to be a policeman. In her time married to him, he would often come home and start beating her unprovoked. His father has told that in previous weeks, Mateen had become disgusted and angry over a same-sex couple kissing in front of him. A list of the name of the victims so far is as follows. Edward Sotomayor Jr., 34 years old. Stanley Elmo DeVar III, 23 years old. Luis Omar Ocasio-Capo, 20 years old. Juan Ramon Guerrero, 22 years old. Eric Avan Oritz Riviera, 36 years old. Peter O. Gonzalez Cruz, 22 years old. Luis S. Vielma, 22 years old. Kimberly Morris, 37 years old. Eddie Jamond Roy Justice, 30 years old. Daryl Roman Burt II, 29 years old. Danoka Deidre Drayton, 32 years old. Alejandro Barros Martinez, 21 years old. Anthony Lewis Lurian Odisella, 25 years old. Jean Carlos Mendez Perez, 35 years old. Frankie Jimmy De Jesus Velasquez, 50 years old. Amanda Alvear, 25 years old. Martin Benitez Torres, 33 years old. And Luis Daniel Wilson Leon, 37 years old. Though many American politicians have come forward with prayers for the victims and families, there has been little word of gun laws being tightened. One commenter saying, the only thing stopping most people from committing mass shootings in the US right now is the fact that they don't want to. Mateen was killed by a SWAT team in the early hours of the morning after he took 30 hostages. Australian Cairns-based women's rights advocate Dr. Carol Ford has had her name featured on the Queen's Birthday Honour list. The 69-year-old founded the Cairns Women's Network and was a founding member of Pro-Choice Cairns and secretary of the Peninsula branch of the Association of Women's Educators. Amongst other works towards equality, Dr. Carol Ford continues to lobby towards safe and legal abortion in Queensland. Though we celebrate Dr. Ford and her well-deserved recognition, it should also be noted that the name of men on this year's honour list outnumbered women 3-1. And in Western Australia, we are to debut a new mental health program to assist Indigenous women throughout pregnancy. The program titled Baby Coming, You Ready? Uses images and illustrations to help flag needed support. PhD student Jane Coates, who has led the study, is hoping that more culturally sensitive and relevant program will better assist expecting parents in the Indigenous community. Aboriginal women, when screened, are usually done so with the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, or EPDS, which was developed in Scotland, and that's about 40 years ago. Coates has said, we know that Aboriginal children are removed from their parents and put into out-of-home care at a rate 10 times higher than non-Aboriginal children, as she explained. It's not due to bad parenting. They are simply struggling to deal with multiple social and emotional pressures life has dealt them. The program will be trialled in 4 locations for 12 months starting in July. Murdoch Professor of Aboriginal Health and Wellbeing, Rhonda Marriott, will be leading the project. And that is the broadcast news. Now,
yes, and also we've got to mention that we're abroad. We do send our sincerest condolences to the victims and the victims' families of the shooting at Orlando and to the rest of the community that is out there. And we stand together with you in this time, this terrible, tragic time. Yeah, it's not a lot to say, really.
It's been a really hard day, and it's obviously a big priority in the news at the moment, and rightly so, because it's being dismissed on air. It's the hate crime aspect of it is being dismissed.
Yeah,
on a lot of aspect, it's just absolutely unbelievable that it would be dismissed in this way.
The commercial stations tend to brush over it. It's not even mentioning the word gay or LGBTIQ or queer. And that was the reason for the shooting was because of this person's virulent, hateful attitude, and obviously needed help but didn't receive any. And it's led to this disaster to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it is that ongoing discussion that America seems to be ignoring, which is, you know, yes, okay, sane people own guns, that's fine and all, but the problem is that if you are mentally unstable, or you are suffering mental illness, or not able to sort of perceive reality in such a way, you do have access and easy access to firearms, and you know, it's probably a discussion for another time, but it is very ongoing.
Julie,
in any case,
what's happened?
Yeah, it was interesting when I woke up this morning and found out about it. My partner said to me, you wouldn't know the stats on the correlation between domestic violence and mass murders, would you? And I was able to say I don't have those stats to hand. But the thing that it did raise for me is that it's about people feeling that they're entitled to treat people that they think that are less than, whether it be for their gender, whether it be for their sexuality, whether it be for their colour, their religion. It really doesn't matter. That is your genesis of this hate.
This is the message that gets through, is if you are vitriolic, and if you are spreading hatred of this kind towards people of colour or people who are different from yourself, gender, sexuality, whatever it might be, genetic makeup, whatever it is, it eventually is going to cause a lot of harm, and this is the ultimate worst type of harm, you know, that can happen, and to express it in this way is phenomenally just terrible, and it needs to be recognised as possibly one of the worst incidences of its kind for LGBTIQ in our history. I would
absolutely.
I'm just in recent history that I can remember.
Yeah, I honestly can't ever remember. Like, there, of course, there are horrible acts happening every day on an individual basis, but something like this, it needs to be remembered, and America needs to do better.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And also the story did hit as well that queer men couldn't give blood for their own friends and family and neighbours who'd been injured by this terrible tragedy. And that in itself is another tragedy on tragedy, because, again, it's about homophobia. It's about mistrust of bisexual and gay men. And it's about...
It's out-of-date laws in place, put in place by people who
that's
are afraid.
That's our opinion anyway.
But, that is definitely... There probably is more of a medical aspect to it as well. But, I mean, we've come such a long way if you are concerned about blood infection and things like that as well. It's we're beyond it. In any case, we should talk to you, Julie Kuhn, about WIRE.
Yes. WIRE. A fantastic organisation, if I do say so myself.
You're biased.
You wouldn't happen to be the CEO, would you?
Acting CEO, yeah. WIRE has been around for 34 years. People often don't know it's been around that long. And we are the only organisation in Victoria that will talk to any woman on any issue and provide support and information and referrals without judgment, without them needing an appointment.
Oh, okay.
It really is. It's not about stigmatising people. It's not about charity. It's about we see that empowerment is through information. Empowerment is through being able to talk through what those issues are and looking what are the best options that you have. So for 34 years, that's what we've been doing. So that's something that's really, really important to us.
So what sort of inquiries would you get on a day-to-day basis?
Women's service, so the most we get is family violence, and I'm sure that's a surprise. No, it's not a surprise to anyone
not
who's
in this
listening.
Room. Yeah.
But after that, it's housing.
Oh.
And that is just growing astronomically. It really is. And we're speaking to women that have done absolutely everything they can to try and find housing, and they can't. They've looked for rentals. They've applied to DHHS to get housing. They've gone through all that, can I find some shared housing, and there's nothing there for them. So it's not for the lack of nous. It's not for the lack of will. There just isn't affordable housing out there. And, of course, this is very much a gendered issue for women, because there's a 17.3% pay gap, that it is women that are looking after children, and often where there's people have separated, women are raising children without getting child support, without getting the appropriate support, and that just makes it all the harder.
I can imagine it's like the regular stigma as well of rental applications, looking up single mum, kids, too much of a risk there, or something like that as well, where it's that sort of, another way of bias.
Yeah, and then the other thing is you say, right, we're all young women, we're going to have a shared house together, that's the way we can spread out our costs, and they go, it might be a party house. Make all those sort of judgments as well. So it does make it really, really, really difficult.
The mistrust of young women, constant and undying. Yeah.
Yes.
Quite frustrating. Yeah. It is an odd thing as well, especially just like the basic power structures of and studies where they've just had rooms or even resumes where they've had exactly the same credentials.
Yes.
This could be for housing as well. And they'll put a male name on the top and it will be accepted. And if it's a female name, or even if it's from a non-Anglo background or sounding name, it will be completely ignored or, it's amazing.
And that study's absolutely amazing. I know it quite well because they did this resume thing where one was Peter ER and one was Peter just with an E, and they asked the recruiters not only would you employ them, and if they had Peter with an R, they were more likely to employ them, but they would, if they would employ them with more pay, and said they would be prepared to provide them more mentoring support as well, just by virtue of having that male name. And that didn't matter whether the recruiter was male or female. It had the same effect.
It's just so institutionalised, isn't it? Yeah.
It's ingrained. Yeah. And so we have a crisis because of that,
I think. I think that is part of it. That is part of it. You know, family violence, the main reason why women are homeless is family violence. They don't have a safe home to go to. And we have a program called the Amica Club, and Amica means female friend in Latin. And we get women who say, no, I'm not homeless, but I can't return to my house because of the violence there. So we find with women, they define homelessness differently to men. So we'll have women attending the Amica Club that are living in a backpackers or are living in their car or are living on a friend's couch because they cannot return home. They can't return to what they actually call their home. Or they've left that relationship, and if there's been financial abuse, they haven't been allowed to earn an income, then they've got no money to pay for housing. So they're living in a rooming house that's... family violence causes positive poverty, and poverty causes homelessness.
It's a vicious cycle.
So this is coming up too as well. I mean, you have an annual appeal that is targeting women's homelessness.
Yes, that's
so
right.
How can we get involved with that? And
well, definitely, we've had people that have been running events for us, and one, Lauren, that you could be interested in, the Brown Coats, which is part of, if you're into Firefly, it's a Firefly support group. They just recently did a trivia night for us. So there are organisations or groups of people that are just ringing up saying, we want to hold an event and raise money for WIRE. And if someone's interested in doing that, they can just give me a bell on 9348 9416, extension 8. But also, if you go to WIRE, Give Now, we have an annual appeal. All the money is going to our Amica Club, so it will go to support our homeless women's lunch and activity program that we run 3 days a week.
Wow.
You can also go you can also go to our website, which is www.wire.org.au.
Beautiful. Those links will be available on our broad Facebook page as well. You'll be able to find everything.
I think I have already. Yep. Well, the Facebook. You've got a Facebook
We've got
page.
Facebook. Yes. We're in the 21st century. Fantastic.
That'd be awesome. Well, thank you, Julie. Look, don't go away yet, though. More abroad to come. And don't forget to message us 0427-JOY949. You can phone us on 1300-JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. And we've actually had some great memberships come through, which is really, really positive. Thank you so much, everybody. We've had a membership from Cesar and Pran, if I said that right, Pran, like in Pran. Yep. And he's joined up, become a Joy member. So you can still go into the draw for the big prize for the Joy Radiothon. We had our Radiothon week, but now it's Radiothon till the 30th. Woo-hoo. Another person that has joined is Sufian. He says, great job. Thank you very much. That's really awesome of you. Keep us on air, and thank you very much for joining Joy. It's easy to do. You can do it yourself. Just jump online, joy.org.au, press the buttons, and become a member.
Woohoo. Wonderful. So do stick around. We'll be talking Queens, and we'll be having a wonderful interview up next as well with Celine. Charlene Robinson about gay and lesbian then and now.
Thank you. This is Broad on Joy.
This is Jamie Babbitt, the director of But I'm a Cheerleader, and you are listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Hi, we're the Girl Freeders, and you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
This is Broad on Joy 94.9. And this is the interview I had with Shirlene, the co-author of Gay and Lesbian Then and Now, Australian Stories from a Social Revolution. It's a fabulous book. I recommend it. Check it out. And some interesting facts from the perspective of some in our community over the last 60 or 70 years. Fascinating. It's awesome. And this is Broad here on Joy 94.9. This is Sonia for Broad here on Joy 94.9. And we're very fortunate to speak to our co-author, Dr. Shirlene Robinson, about a book called Gay and Lesbian, Then and Now, Australian Stories from a Social Revolution. Welcome to Broad, Shirlene.
Thank you for talking with me.
And so tell us a bit about yourself and what led you to get involved in writing, putting this book together.
Robert and myself, who's the co-author, we're both historians who work at Macquarie University and identify as members of the LGBT community. And we were really interested, I guess, in using oral history interviews to look at the way that gay and lesbian people have experienced a lot of the really dramatic social changes of the last 60 years.
As a social revolution, and calling it that, what was the impetus for, as part of the content and as part of the name of the book, to call it a social revolution?
I think we were inspired by the fact that if you have a look back to, I guess, how people thought about homosexuality, really, I guess, until the quite recent past, something really dramatic and significant has changed. So we could be talking about, you know, the 1960s where people were going through forcible treatment in the medical profession, or up to even in New South Wales, you know, the 1984 when it was illegal to engage in male-to-male sexual activity. And now we're talking about a situation where 72% of Australians support marriage equality. Changes have occurred quite quickly, and it led us to argue that rapid transformation in attitudes really has been something of a revolution. A lot of the social change, I think, that has happened for gay and lesbian people particularly, I think it's been very important what has happened internationally. So, you know, things like Stonewall do have, I think, a really big historic importance. And, you know, obviously in Australia we had Mardi Gras in 1978, which was a really important turning point as well, so that public visibility. But I think there's something that's also been happening, I guess, within the workplace and within homes and in discussions between people. So the people that we were interested in talking to were perhaps people whose stories hadn't been told. You know, there's been some really interesting work that's been done on activists who were very important, but we were really interested in looking at the stories of people that you might think of as being sort of more ordinary everyday people, and to look at what life had been like for them, you know, over the course of the past 60 years or so.
And also for our show, looking at feminism, looking at women and their experiences and their journey and stories that they have. Did that sort of also come out in your investigations as you were doing the research about, you know, women's experiences in particular within the community?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So, you know, the book, obviously, we interviewed gay men and lesbians, but it became quite clear that there's very different experiences that have happened historically for those two groups of people. They've both been subjected to discrimination. For women, definitely women sort of, you know, I guess, who came of age during the women's movement, that's an incredibly powerful and significant force in their lives for a lot of them. It really does, I think, give them a sense of community, which is very important, and a sense of support, which is important. So a lot of people will talk about that as being something that really does empower them quite significantly of a particular generation.
As you were going through the research, did you find, now looking at millennials, any sort of differences that, you know, jumped out at you in regards to that?
I think that it's quite the biggest change that you can sort of see coming through, and it's hard to, I guess it kind of reflects a lot of debates that have been happening within the community, but it's sort of a bit of a move towards people perhaps wanting to live lives that we might consider as being more ordinary, whereas in the past perhaps people were, particularly people in the LGBT community, were more interested, I guess, in this idea of transgressive experiences and sort of, you know, the rich culture that came from, I guess, being outside of society. For our millennials, there's been much more of a move towards being ordinary, living a sort of fairly ordinary suburban life. And it's interesting because that's something that wouldn't have been possible, you know, for earlier people that we interviewed. In terms of the question of feminism and whether that's, I guess, important for younger people, that's it's not really something that came up as much in the course of our interviews. And I suppose in that sense, perhaps that is something that might reflect interviews that you perhaps might do with younger straight people. They might sort of not talk about it so much as being a force, which is a really interesting question, I think, for feminism more broadly about what people think it is and making people understand that it is something that is important and influential and helpful in life.
With civil rights movements and things like feminism and, of course, queer rights, gay and lesbian, LGBTIQ rights and equality, those sort of things have merged over time. So do you think that's a trend for the future?
I guess you could say the book shows that perhaps life is becoming a little bit easier for gay and lesbian people. But as a historian, I think the co-author Robert and I would both be a little bit hesitant to predict what the future might hold. You know, you can move forward, but things can also swing and there can be backlashes and things like that. So I think, if anything, it just shows, I guess, you know, what has been a remarkable social change and I guess a move towards equality and acceptance, and certainly one that I hope will continue to progress.
As a woman, while you were doing the book yourself, what sort of questions did you have about your own self, if any, when you were talking to a lot of the people?
I suppose because I identify as being a lesbian myself, it was interesting. You know, you feel like you would have, I guess, some sort of understanding and connection with a lot of the other women. And I thought, you know, that was quite a nice thing to go into the interviews and do. But I guess the way that women and men tell their stories often can be quite different. So I would go in there with a bit of an awareness about that. Because in my non-university life, I do a little bit of work around marriage equality. I was always quite interested to see how people viewed that without, of course, sort of expressing my own views on that issue. So that was one that I was, you know, found quite interesting, the way people viewed relationships and, I guess, had commitment to each other or didn't have commitment to each other in a pre-marriage equality era, and perhaps what they might make of it today, because that's been a very rapid shift. So that's something that interested me a little bit.
Well, look, thank you so much for speaking to us, Shirlene Robinson, about this fantastic book, Gay and Lesbian Then and Now, Australian Stories from a Social Revolution. Your cohort, or colleague, is Robert Reynolds, and look, I hope it does really well. It is out now. It's published through Black Ink Books. I really do hope that more people pick it up, read it, because what I've been doing is dipping in and out. You know, it's a great thing you can do. Yes, it is chronological, but you can actually jump in and pick a character. Thank you so much for speaking to us here on Broad.
Thank you very much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
What's the most important issue for women in Australia? Just looking at generally, like in Australia, is there anything in Australia, do you think?
It's really hard to say, and I think actually that there's the most important issue will be different for different women, you know. I'm a middle-class white woman. My issues will be different from other women. For me, I guess it's about being treated like someone who is a leader and has authority and has a voice that's worthwhile. But that's my, you know, the personal issue for my life. More broadly, I think for women everywhere, it's about being free from violence and having equal access to opportunities and being heard. And, you know, there's so many different approaches for different women.
They Be Broad on Joy 94.9.
Have you forgotten the women's movement?
I don't deny the need for equality activism, and including women's equality.
Well, that was right during the women's lib movement. And a lot of women were going, you know, you sort of had to go to the extreme in order to get someplace in the middle in terms of fighting for women's rights.
I'm one of the few people who so far has kind of, I've benefited from a lot of women's hard work, you know, as women through the 60s and 70s.
And any civilization that does not recognize the female is doomed to destruction. Women are the wave of the future, and sisterhood is stronger than anything.
That's the crux of what Wonder Woman is.
Right.
Right there, that speech.
There's going to be a girl kiss, and there's going to be, yeah, some sort of element of nakedness.
There's something about that, the goddess within, that part, that secret part that resides in every woman, that is a Wonder Woman, you know, that yearns for that independence and strength.
Who was an inspiration?
Oh, well, my mother, and believe it or not, Catholic nuns. I went to, you know, Catholic school, and it was all run by nuns, and they were good women. There was none of this hateful kind of broomsticking behavior that, you know, goes on. They were good women. They were, and they're real activists, and they've been such supporters of me and my activism.
You go get 'em, Wonder Woman. Hi, I'm Linda Carter.
Hi, this is Lucy Lawless.
otherwise known as Xena Warrior Princess, and you're listening to Broad. Broad on Broad. Joy Radio. Joy Radio.
Your Majesty, I must again speak to you about your marriage with Prince Charles.
Oh, this eternal talk about Charles. I cannot tell you how it wearies me. I do not see eye to eye with Charles about anything.
He is a hero.
There are varieties of heroes. He's a hero at fighting, and fighting bores me. His only gift is with a sword.
The sword has made Sweden great, Your Majesty. Ah, you cannot remake the world, Your Majesty.
Why not? The philosophers remake it, the artists remake it, the scientists remake it. Now, why not we who wield the power? The people will follow blindly the generals who lead them to destruction. Will they not follow us who lead them beyond themselves? But there is grace and beauty, gaiety.
Your Majesty, it is for Sweden. It is your duty.
Why is it my duty? My days and nights are given up to the service of the state. I serve the people with all my thoughts, with all my energy, with all my dreams, waking and sleeping. I do not wish to marry, and they cannot force me.
You are Sweden's queen. But, Your Majesty, you cannot die an old maid.
I have no intention to, Chancellor. I shall die a bachelor.
Yes, well said. Happy Queen's Day today here on Broad on Joy 94.9, and that's one of my favourite queens. Well, at least the Hollywood version. Queen Christina of Sweden. She was around in the 1600s, 1632 to 1654. Queen of the Swedes, the Goths and the Wends, and Grand Princess of Finland, as well as Duchess to Estonia, Livonia, Karelia, Bremen-Verden, Stettin, Pomerania, Kasabea, Vandalia. Whew, wow, she was a busy woman. And, yes, lived the life of a happy gay bachelor.
Woohoo!
Never married. Refused to marry for political reasons that they wanted her to marry. And she just said, no, not doing it.
Not going to happen.
And was believed to be someone who enjoyed the company of other women.
Good work.
Here we go.
Yeah,
I'm talking about Greta Garbo.
Yeah, right. I was going to say Greta Garbo. Yeah.
Who said, leave me alone?
Leave me alone. I'm done.
Greta Garbo.
Yeah.
She did, and she became rather reclusive in the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Like, you mean like leave me alone and like,
yeah,
the
like,
look?
Leave, I'm no, me alone.
Leave me alone. I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Other queens. So
we've got amazing queens.
Birthday,
it is.
Yeah.
It is a queen's birthday, yep. But there are other fantastic queens. And because we haven't had a bad bitches of history, this
yes,
is sort
Maria.
Of our poor man's version.
Maria out there.
Maria Lewis, if you are listening to us. But yeah, of course. So we might start off with a classic, with a fantastic Cleopatra. Who could forget? So the ancient Egyptian queen and the nation's final pharaoh, Cleopatra, was one of the first female state leaders in history. She defended Egypt against the Roman Empire and spoke 9 languages.
Yeah, she could also handle an asp.
Ah.
I mean, I'm talking about a snake.
Yeah.
She had great asp.
Yeah. Terrible.
Asp talents, yeah.
Oh.
Asp skills. And there's Queenie. Betty.
Queenie.
Oh, Betty.
Betty.
Betty the First.
Mm-mm-mm.
Great Britain's answer to, oh, my God, you know, she was the answer. She was like Kanye West. She just was in charge. She just had vision and went forward with it and didn't, you know, just kept going. Basically kept the Spanish out of Britain, pretty much, and the Armada, and considered a virgin queen, whatever that meant. Pivotal at the time of English history, certainly gave support to Shakespeare and theatre and art, and in her day was pretty badass, really.
Totally badass. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favourite queen, Julie? Queen Julie.
Queen Julie. There has been a few Queen Julies.
Have there?
I've Hungarian extraction, and there
is a
Queen
Titi. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I've learned to adjust, yeah. But there was Queen Titi who...
what a great name.
Yeah, that was her nickname, but it was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Austrians were being particularly nasty to the Hungarians, and she sort of stood up and said, I actually really hate my husband and I'm going to live in Budapest, and sort of protected the populace of Hungary.
And Budapest was rocking. Budapest was an amazing epicentre of culture and diversity.
Yes, yes, it was. And it was one of the most modern cities around the around 1800s. So, so that would be one of my favourites.
I think they had the waltz before Vienna. That's a bit of controversy. Only here on Broad do you hear such controversy. Provocation. We're looking across obviously the oceans here. We've got Empress Wu. I want to say Wu-Tang, but I won't.
I want to say Zaytan.
Zaytan, yeah. Yes. Tell us about her.
Basically ruthless in her rise to power in the Tang dynasty, Wu Zaytan was the only female emperor in Chinese history. She was a stoic leader who prevented anyone from usurping her. And she also did wonders for social reform. So I'm not – that's sort of like the wiki version. So social reform –
Yeah. Reforming
social. Smashing it. Yeah, but like it's so common that there'll be only the one female ruler ever in history, and they are so regularly overlooked. Yeah.
We keep looking at the same ones, usually with that Eurocentric aspect. And of course, you know, when we've got people like Queen Lakshmabai. I hope I got that right. Lakshmabai, she was in northern India, called Jhansi in the mid-19th century, considered a central figure in the Indian Rebellion of 1857 against the British. And she was kind of considered like India's very own Joan of Arc, which is a bit sad because we all know how that ends.
Of course.
Fierce woman, indeed, unyielding, killing anyone who stood in her way for India's freedom. And that is amazing. And it's so funny how the British did that time and time again, pounded down and subjugated these people from whatever continents they were on. Because Britain had its own kick-ass queen. I don't mean, just Elizabeth I, but way back when the British were invaded by the Romans, it was Queen Boudica, who I believe had a war cry probably like Xena and dressed a bit like that too. She was Britain's very own Amazonian, but with woolies on because it was much more colder. And after her husband was killed, she was tortured by the Roman Empire. Her daughters were raped and taken away from her. Money was taken, all the goods. She then raised a bunch of around 100,000 of troops and fought against the Romans and almost made it. She wiped out 80,000 of the opposition, almost made it when she was captured and did away with herself.
Drink poison, I believe.
That's amazing. So rather taken her life than be taken alive. Yeah. Amazing.
Because I would have tortured her
anyway. Of course.
And can I say, if you want to know more, Horrible Histories have got a great rap song about it.
I know the King Charles one.
It's great. It is fantastic. I suggest you go out and Google it.
I love Horrible Histories, I'm not going to lie. And Horrible Histories really actually lifted the bar on representation as well. My friend used to work for the BBC.
Yeah.
And she said that it was like their figurehead. Like that was like their crowning piece was Horrible Histories. They tried to incorporate as much female representation or make it as 50-50 as they could. And it's a kids show. Like it's designed to be catchy and punchy and sort of gross and funny and it very informative, like all in the one. So yes, A plus.
And of course in the Pacific we've got a great queen there. In more recent times, when I mean more recent, you know, 19th century to the early 20th century. And that's Queen Liliuokalani, born Lydia Luiuni Loluku Owalanani Wiwi Kamakahia, the last monarch and only queen regent of the Kingdom of Hawaii. She was a native indigenous Hawaiian woman as well. She was also an author. She was a musician too. She published a couple of books, The Story of Hawaii, by her. It was called Hawaii Story by Hawaii Queen. Of course it was. And she played guitar, piano, ukulele, sang in Hawaiian and English, ruler of the Hawaiian kingdom. Sadly, it was overthrown by the United States. She was put under house arrest in her own palace and kingdom after 1895. She tried a counter-revolution, but that failed, sadly. And to this day, the Hawaiian people are still occupied by the United States. So she is still, she's no longer with us, sadly. Died in 1917. But she dictated in her will, when she passed away, that all of her possessions and properties would be sold and the money would go to the Queen Liliuokalani, a children's trust to help orphaned children and destitute children. And the trust fund still exists today.
Wow.
What an awesome legacy. What a fabulous kick-ass bad bitch she was. Awesome
total
woman.
Bad bitch of history.
There we go.
Yeah,
Hawaii.
Yeah.
Wow. Aloha.
They need to make more films about these women. I'm sure like there are documentaries out there, but I want feature-length kick-ass films about women of history because, you know, these stories aren't being told any other way. And if you want to capture an audience, I mean, I'm captured just by listening to you talk about them. Why?
I don't know why. Because I'm sitting right here.
Maybe
opposite you.
Why aren't they doing
And people don't realise that Hawaii is a captured state. People don't realise it's occupied.
Mm. I didn't. Not until you were
explaining. The Americans took it by force.
Mm. Find that hard to believe.
This is just our opinion. And look, interesting. She was also a Buddhist.
Ah.
Wow.
What do you know?
Like, neither Hawaiians were Buddhists.
Neither did I, but she practiced it. There you go. Mm. Mm-hmm. I guess that gave you that temperance and that ability to remain calm.
Mm.
You know, meditation does have a good positive effect.
Yeah, it does. It does indeed. Mm. Yeah.
I'm learning a lot.
Now, we need to learn more about you. Like, we need more about the website where people can go.
Yeah. Well,
find out more.
We have a great website. Mm-hmm. And if you go to, I'll repeat it again, www.wired.org.au, we've got all our information booklets there. We've got information booklets on stalking, on housing, mm. housing crisis, family violence, counselling, a whole range. Separation, all those sort of things are there. So go to the website. You can also find out when we're running information seminars. If you are experiencing homelessness or you're at risk of homelessness, then you can come to our Amica Club, and our office is at 372 Spencer Street, West Melbourne. So we're just a 5-minute walk from Flagstaff Station.
Used to be in Little Lonsdale? No.
We used to be in Flinders Lane.
Flinders Lane.
But we moved. That's about 10 years ago. But we do get people to sometimes say, aren't you near on Flinders Street Station? We go, yeah, for 30 years ago. Yeah. We've moved several times since then. So now we're at 372 Spencer Street. Mm. So Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, we run the Amica Club. It's a fantastic club. It's all about empowerment. It's all about providing support to women in a way that's not stigmatising and allows them to be the women that they want to be and that they are. Because I can tell you, the women that we provide services to, they're strong and resilient women, and we're just working with them to make them
fulfil their potential
and to advocate for them on a wider scale. Mm. And we also have a telephone support line, and that number is 1300 134 130. So I'll just repeat that again. That's 1300 134 130. So if you call us up, and if you're on a mobile, because there is extra charges if there's a mobile, just say you're on a mobile and we'll call you back.
Okay.
And you can talk to us, as I said, on any issue. And sometimes what we get lots of people, they've got just shit going on with their life, and it's hard to put it into boxes and label it. And you can just go, blah. And we'll work through you to work out what it is. And we're not going to say, oh, you've rung up the wrong place.
Right, you need this department. Yeah. Ring this number.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Why did you ring us up? Don't you understand the service delivery system? It's so simple. Because or you can just come in between 9:30 and 4:30 to 372 Spencer Street and just, come in and say hello, use our computers, say you just want to talk to someone, look at all our brochures, and just hang out if you want.
Awesome. Mm. Oh, sounds great. We're going to have you on again in a couple of weeks, or
excellent.
At least one of your colleagues, if you can't.
Yeah, that'll be great.
And I've got to admit, too, you did bring something lovely to the studio tonight. I want to thank you very much for that very wonderful Ford. Mm. It was a rosemary, what would you call it?
It was some sprigs of rosemary.
Sprigs of rosemary.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason for that?
The reason for that is...
Because I'm terrible at explaining these things.
Okay. Yeah. No, the reason for that is because, like everyone else, I've been really affected what's happened in at the Pulse nightclub. And there's no response that seems adequate. Mm. And so I really thought, I knew that joy, everyone must be feeling it. And rosemary stands for remembrance. And so I tied it up with a ribbon from International Women's Day, because we're all strong women here, for Wire to say to Joy that we're standing with you and we're remembering not only the men and the women that died at Pulse nightclub and were injured because of homophobia, but for the GBTLIQ plus community, and that we just stand with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so
That's
much.
That's really a very kind gesture, very nice of you to do that, and we hope people keep in touch, and we'll certainly be keeping you in mind for future
broadcasts
here on Broad.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Oh, nice.
Thank you very much, and thanks. Lauren, too, for coming in and
every week.
Being here.
Thank you so much, Sonia, for panelling and being with me in our feminist journey together.
And we will get onto those podcasts, I promise, very soon. So stick around, joy.org.au for that. And Is Nothing Sacred is up next. Thanks for listening to us tonight on Broad.
Thank you, sisters. You've been listening to this Broad podcast here on Joy 94.9. Don't forget to tune in to us Monday nights at 9 p.m. on Joy for feminism in your ears.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.